Welcome, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Big Mac David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. We have two girls with us today. I don't think we've ever had two girls before, have we? In studio.
Careful now. My girlfriend, Melissa Lemaster, would not be happy about that.
I know. I don't think we've ever had two girls on the show before at the same time. We have with us Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. Her website, JacquelineIsaac.com, focuses on estate plans that cover living trusts, asset protection, special needs, elder law, health care, received multiple awards for her pro bono work, and movie star as well, been on NBC, KUSI, Fox, other television programs. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, you know, I recently was on her website, and you've got quite the philanthropy stuff going on with the children in Egypt. Is that right?
Absolutely. I was born here in Los Angeles, but I moved to Egypt when I was 13 years old, and I saw very quickly how women suffered, how the minorities suffered, and I realized that I was going to spend the rest of my life trying to help them in some way. So our family started a nonprofit organization a few years back, and that's exactly what we do. We help Middle Eastern people across the world. And just this year, actually, we're going to do a mission to help refugees living in San Diego. So we'll let you know about that news that's going to be coming up pretty soon. In September, we're going to have a huge gala to celebrate the lives of these children. So it should be a good time.
Wow, sounds like a worthy cause.
Thank you.
Also with us today, Marguerite Lorenz. She's partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services, the website, mytrustee.net. She's a certified trust and financial advisor, California licensed professional fiduciary. She is the host of Estate Planning 101, which we will get into a little further, and also an author, or co-author, I should say, yes, of Ethics for Trustees. Welcome, Marguerite.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So ahead of us today, you might have guessed, we're going to talk about fiduciary services and wills and trusts, the top five major myths and misconceptions about trusts. Is a will enough to protect you from probate? Questions that attorneys wish their clients would ask. And is estate planning only for when you die? I think you're going to say no.
I know I'm going to say no.
I think unanimously across the boards, we're going to say no. Well, let's start with the overwhelming concept of and just basic stuff. What is a living trust?
A living trust is a contract. Let's say you're married. You're going to create a contract, Ryan, between you and your wife. That contract is going to determine what's going to happen if you were to pass away. Who is going to control your assets? How is it going to be distributed? Do you want to put limitations on it? You do what you will with this contract. I like to always mention that it's not a cookie cutter type document. Every living trust is different depending on the person. For example, if you have a child that doesn't know how to deal with money very well, you can put particular protections to make sure that they don't take all the money for themselves right away and put it in their pocket and use it for that trip to Hawaii. But instead, you can actually monitor those funds to make sure that it's used for their education, their maintenance, their health and support. You can even determine when they get their money, give them a certain amount, a certain sum at one period, and a few years later give them another, just to make sure that they don't waste it, that they're not wasteful. So this living trust is a simple contract that you're creating. It's you're the writer, you're the creator. You put your limitations, you create it as you will. That is a living trust.
Sounds pretty comprehensive.
You know, I've seen where families with a substantial amount of money will actually create a trust where they'll set it up where the children actually have to be participants in the economy, meaning have a job.
Absolutely.
Actually go through college, you know, begin the process of actually accomplishing
exactly.
things in their life rather than just being a trust fund baby sitting back playing Nintendo all day. They actually participate in the world.
David, I'll give you an example. Just the other day, I had a client of mine. She said, I want to make sure my son goes through medical school and residency. I said, are you sure you want to push it all the way to residency? What about if he doesn't want to be a doctor? What if he changes his mind in the middle of the road? She said, no, it's my dream that he becomes a doctor, and those are my terms. If he doesn't finish residency, he's not getting the money.
Wow.
And that's what you can do. I mean, you can literally use it.
That's a pretty high bar.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, you can use it as a motivating factor to push your child to the limit, to make sure that they finish their education. You know, maybe it's medical school, or maybe it's something as important as a bachelor degree. Or maybe it's an occupational school to learn a skill. And so you can really evolve and create what you want to make sure you motivate your child and put them in the right direction. You can also use it to prevent them from doing something they're already doing. Like, for example, we have clients that come into our office that have children that are alcoholics.
Oh.
Or are, you know, some kind of substance abuse. And so one of the requirements to get their inheritance would be to go through a 3-month, 4-month rehabilitation course, or, you know, actually being admitted into a rehabilitation facility. So you can literally create what you want for these documents to make sure it's not just going to be used to give inheritance. It can also be used to motivate, to push, or to prevent your child from doing something that you know is going to be disastrous for their future.
Which means it's important that the eldest child not be the trustee of that trust. You know, the worst wars we've seen among kids have been about these control issues, even though mom has instructed it.
Well, it's a good point, because that is actually a recipe for disaster in a lot of cases, because if you have other family members, they may be jealous that you're now in charge of distributing the assets from the estate. They may be, you know, families get in a lot of arguments when it comes to money.
And control. And
in fact, it's a lot of responsibility for the person who is the trustee. In fact, we just met. Quick story is we met with this client that was referred to us that is now in charge of helping mom through this last transition of her life. She's in an assisted care community right now with dementia, and he's having trouble managing things, and he has to pay $7,000 a month in order to keep her, you know, in this facility or this community.
Absolutely.
Right? And
it's a good price.
His concern was most of the assets that they have, the cash assets, is tied up in the real estate. They wanted us to sell the house. But he's also concerned about how long it was going to take to sell the house and didn't want his mom to move around. You know, we actually stepped up and said, well, why don't we bridge the gap? We're going to loan you $50,000 in order to make sure that, you know, you're going to be able to keep her in that place. And we're going to sell the house, and then we'll be reimbursed that $50,000 when it's all said and done. But, you know, we can sense that there was a tremendous relief when we began to show him how we could solve the problems that he has. And you know, you actually take on those problems for families on your own.
I do. And even long before the kids ever get the money, you know, this is really your oxygen mask. You know, the rule is you have to put yours on first when you get on an airplane, right? You can't help other people unless you have your mask on. Well, it's the same thing with your estate plan. You really need to look at your needs, your care, what will happen if you're unable to make those decisions for yourself, and then what? And who will make those decisions is just as important as getting the documents. And don't think you can just get the documents and not keep them up to date.
Absolutely. And Marguerite, you know, we also do that. We also do Medi-Cal planning. When we see clients, for example, where we see that maybe they have a family history of Alzheimer's or dementia, we take a look at all the factors. We're not just worried about the finances. We're not just worried about what's going to happen when they pass away, but we also prioritize what will happen if for any reason they need to go into long-term healthcare. How can we save their assets? How can we make sure that it's not depleted in just a matter of time? Because healthcare, as you know, is extremely expensive in California. You know, we were talking about co-trustees and just having trustees generally have a major responsibility on their shoulder. A lot of times I see clients that come to me and say, we want all our children to be trustees. We want them to all be equal. We'll have them all as co-trustees. That's a major problem. You see siblings fighting all the time, from when they're little to when they get older. And let me tell you, the truth comes out when the parents are gone and they're dealing with, you know, the financial issues. So in that situation, I always tell my clients, if you're going to go co-trustees, you need to know that you're opening the door for family feud.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Jacqueline Isaac. Her website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's her website, jacquelineisaac.com. And she went through really all the ways I shouldn't say all the ways. I'm sure there are many more.
All.
But a lot of examples of how a trust can be customized for the specific situation, which really plays into, you know, just going online and downloading the documents is simply scratching the surface, right? There's an enormous amount of additional effort and expertise needs to go into crafting the appropriate trust. One more time, the website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's the website, jacquelineisaac.com. When we come back, we're going to talk to Marguerite Lorenz. She's our fiduciary. We're going to ask her what questions does she think, well, I guess it's from attorneys, what questions are attorneys saying that they wished their clients would ask them?
Yes, let's get those clients to be smarter. Yes.
When we come back.
Hi.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Jacqueline Isaac, state planning attorney. One more time, her website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's her website, jacquelineisaac.com.
And we talked briefly when we first started about some of the things you're doing over there in Egypt for the children. And the video is still on your website,
yes,
is that right?
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in finding out more about what Jacqueline Isaac is doing for children in Egypt, go to her website. I encourage you to do that. It is right there on the front page. Check out jacquelineisaac.com for more information about some of the things you're actually doing.
And again, this year we're going to help refugees right in our hometown, right here in San Diego. We're going to find some children that really need help in San Diego. The community is all going to get involved. We're going to team up to make a difference in their lives.
It is true. There's a lot of people out there that need help right here in our own backyard. And that is actually part of what your career is all about, is really advising people to take the right steps in order to get their financial situation in order. Because there's actually a plan in place right now that people don't realize called probate. And if you don't agree with what probate has outlined for you, then Jacqueline Isaac can actually override some of those guidelines and make your wishes happen for you.
You know, thank you so much for mentioning that. It all goes together. I'm a humanitarian. I love to help people understand their rights, how to grasp their rights. And I realize that right here in the United States, there's a lot of people that just do not know how to grasp the right that's available. And that is to have a living trust. If you don't have a living trust and you have assets worth over $150,000 in the state of California, and you pass away, even with a will, it is going to go through probate court. And let me tell you, that is a long, expensive, and public proceeding that no one needs to go through. It's not necessary, and it can be avoided if you just grasp onto that right that you have.
Well, if someone were to make a decision to actually sit down and do a trust, there's some things that are showing up right now that some banks are not accepting. For example, when you have dual trustees.
Absolutely. So one of the issues that we found, we had a client that came in a few months back, and she was adamant that she wanted both her children to be agents for actually her power of attorney, even more simple than a trust. And Wells Fargo rejected it. They said, no, you have to pick one or the other, because otherwise we have liability here. So we always tell our clients before they appoint co-trustees, think about it 10 times, because those children are going to have issues with the banks. They're going to have issues on a practical level getting those assets out of the financial institutions. Why put your children under that burden, you know? And then you put two children, your children that you knew were fighting since they were 5 years old, you're putting those two children under the same power and under the same authority, like you said earlier, two heads on a snake, right? You have two people that are trying to go one way or the other, and it can cause family conflict. The whole idea of doing a living trust is to make sure that there's peace of mind, that your children and your family are secure. Don't put the potential out there for them to have that type of conflict.
Well, you know, if you suspect that there's going to be conflict, and generally speaking, from our perspective, we see this happen a lot, or you're having trouble figuring out who you're going to identify as a trustee, then there's a fiduciary. that can actually act as the trustee. And that's why we have Marguerite Lorenz here to explain to us, Marguerite, what a fiduciary actually does.
Well, we are very lucky in California. We actually have California licensed professional fiduciaries. And if you want more information about that, you can go to fiduciary.ca.gov. We actually have a licensing bureau that is in the Department of Consumer Affairs. So essentially, a fiduciary is someone who takes a special responsibility, a special duty of trust. And not only does that fiduciary have to put the client first, put the client's interest before their own, but they also have to consider the remaindermen or beneficiaries. So, for instance, one of the jobs that a fiduciary should do for a living client, this is someone who's become incapacitated or has chosen to resign as trustee of their own trust, and they can resign from their own power of attorney, and they're giving someone else power, perhaps even as agent for healthcare. You can do all that with these documents. Once you do that, you need someone that you can trust who will do a cash flow projection, kind of figure out what's needed, what's coming in, what's going out, where do you want to live, how do you want to live, how important is your dog to you? There's a lot of questions that you really want your trustee to ask. And unfortunately, what I've seen for a lot of adult kids is that they think they know their mom or dad. Mm-hmm. They think they know the answers. And they also already know how much they're willing to spend on those things.
Oh, yeah.
So asking a beneficiary to really put your desires first is challenging for anybody. And I promise you, being objective is the toughest human endeavor.
Well, you know, when someone is living their life and they're in their career and they're in the muck of whatever life situation that they're in, and then mom and dad passes away and now they find themselves as trustee and they're in the middle of this whirlwind of what's going on. Mom's being put down and the children are asking what's going to happen with all the assets, and you know, you're still trying to run your life. Well, you know, in this situation, you're not really aware of all the things that can come up. Whereas this is something that you do all the time.
Right. And you have to know that just because you've been named doesn't mean you have to do the job. And I get it. You're honor bound. The dying have asked you to do this job. It is a job. Mm-hmm. It is not a privilege. It's not just an honor. It is a J-O-B job. And you may have to say no to other people that you love. And you may have to say, wait, I can't send you any money yet because there's rules to follow. Oh, and by the way, you might not know what the rules are to follow. And so you have to have legal counsel in every case anyway. I do, even as a professional fiduciary, because there'll be someone who comes up who needs the money now, but I still have to follow all the rules. The probate code is a very thick book. Mm-hmm. By the way, you can buy yours at Walmart if you want to. But the idea is that if you look at the probate code, just flip through it. If you think your mom and dad's successor trustee, you ought to be familiar. Mm-hmm. You ought to call up an attorney and ask, should I take this if the time comes? You know,
and you know, in our office, we create, for all our clients, we give them a booklet. It's a trust administration booklet that says, what do you need to know when your spouse passes away? What do you need to do if your parents are gone? And we help you through it every step of the way. We'll take care of the administration process. And there are times where beneficiaries will want their money right now, like you said, Marguerite. And this is where they come to us and they say, what do we do? They're saying they're going to sue us because they want their money now. But no, there are rules. There needs to be notices that need to be provided. There needs to be wills that have to be filed. There's so many steps that have to be taken before the distribution takes place. And we can affirm that and help them through the process at every step of the way. So a trustee does have a job. And what he can do is just come to an attorney like us and say, how do we do this? Can you help? And we will take them through it.
But you still have tough decisions to make. And even though the attorney may advise you, you are the decision maker. Mm-hmm. And there may be a CPA and a financial advisor, realtor, landscaper, maid.
Absolutely.
The list goes on.
Absolutely.
Locksmith. Okay, so you have a duty, an obligation to document everything you do, to understand why you made that decision even 5 years later. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to ask you, why did you do it that way? So the booklet is a nice guideline, and our book, Ethics for Trustees, might help you consider some of these issues. But I promise you cannot be objective about mom's needs. You cannot be objective about her stepchildren. You cannot be objective about the house you think you're going to move into but can't afford to buy out your other family members. I mean, there are situations where really the trustee needs to be a professional third party who's going to ask these questions and be willing to take steps so everyone is heard in the process and everyone gets what they're entitled to and it's all documented and done.
So here are the questions that you really need to be asking if you're one of these people that are thinking, who should I name as a trustee? Ask yourself, do you have a person that you trust 100% that has the capacity and the ability to manage all these things, to manage the attorney, to manage the realtor, to know that there may be a question that they have to make as to whether or not they're going to sell the house or leave it on the market?
Of course I do. My children are perfect.
But, you know, there are other people that have questions. Like, for example, what I've dealt with immigrant families, they don't have a trustee in mind that has an American citizenship. They need a fiduciary. That's something that would really be necessary. And if I see a client that's in that situation, I call you up, Marguerite, and say, can you be available for this type of responsibility? So what I want to say is it's not in every case. There are times, for example, where you have a beneficiary. It's just one beneficiary, one child. That child will be the trustee over their own assets. Pretty simple. But then you'll have other situations where the children are not getting along, and picking one of them will make the other child hate the sibling.
Even with sole beneficiaries, the caution I have is that you still need to report to that living parent, and you need to bring them the documentation.
Absolutely.
And the financials. And the temptation is to start paying your own bills even before mom has died. So understand that in my work, there's so many different situations, and I recommend strongly that you interview people. You know, I get called by people mm-hmm. all the time saying, well, I'm considering this thing called a fiduciary. You know, maybe I should ask you some questions. And I actually provide questions, and you'll see them on my website, mytrustee.net, where you can use those questions to interview. And by the way, if you're still sure the kids should do it, have them pay your bills for 2 billing cycles. Give them the checkbook now. Let them have it for 2 months, give them all your bills, give them all your responsibilities, and kick back, and in 2 months get the full report and find out how it went. You may be very surprised.
If you're just tuning in, we are talking with Marguerite Lorenz from Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Website is mytrustee.net. Marguerite, the thing that is jumping off the page for me is the cost,
mm-hmm.
right? Because when I see cost, I see two things. Cost of the family and the rest of the trustees arguing. There's a cost to that because
sure.
it may break up the family, right? The second cost is actually how much does it cost to have you do what you do? So, you know, have at it. What is the most cost effective? Is it more cost effective to hire a fiduciary or not?
Well, I'm going to say it is. And in fact, it's one of the questions that attorneys wish their clients would ask more. Is it more cost effective to have a fiduciary instead of a family member? One, keep in mind that family member's never done this job before. And they are conflicted. They're having feelings. Now they have to hire other professionals to do quite a bit of the work, including trust administration work and so on. So working with a fiduciary, ask that individual fiduciary what they charge. You may be very surprised to find it's much more economical than you thought. It could be a tiny percentage of your entire estate. It could be by the hour. Different fiduciaries charge it different ways. And I happen to know for a fact I'm less expensive than any trust company in business today.
Wow. That's a gleaming recommendation there. Good.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Marguerite Lorenz. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's her website, mytrustee.net. When we come back, we're going to speak with Jacqueline Isaac a little bit more about wills, and we might even get into a few of the myths and misconceptions about trusts ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. We've been speaking with Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. One more time, mytrustee.net. Now, shifting our focus over to trust, and we were talking about this a little bit in the break, is all the customization,
mm-hmm.
the layman's terms, if you will, the toppings that can be put on top of your trust ice cream cone and how truly important they are. You had mentioned a couple during the break. Go ahead, Jacqueline.
Yeah, you know, Ryan, a few years back we had a situation that was pretty sad, actually. It was this man, he did a cookie cutter type trust online. You know, you've heard of LegalZoom. Horrible. There's so many suits against it right now. But what he did is he did one of those types of cookie cutter trusts. And when he did that, he said that my children are going to take in equal shares, outright and free of trust. Outright and free of trust means no matter what, they're going to get their distributions. That's it. Right away.
No matter what.
No matter what. What would be a something that would happen? Trust. Well, this is exactly what happened to him. His son was going through a bankruptcy at the time.
Oh.
And so when his son was going through the bankruptcy, all of a sudden, a check came in his name. And the judge was able to see that. And it was wiped out in the inheritance. His inheritance was gone. Now, the daughter was going through issues with her husband at the time. Wasn't at a place of divorce yet, but they were going through some problems. She took her money and she put it in to her joint account with her husband. They got a divorce later. Guess how much her husband got out of that inheritance? 50%. It was considered a gift to the community. So what we did is we figured out ways to override all this, to really address the what-if scenarios. What if your child is going through a bankruptcy? What if they're having problems with creditors?
What if they have a car accident?
What if they have a car accident?
Right.
Because a lot of times clients will say, no, my children are okay with money. They know how to handle their finances. But there are those what-if scenarios that can happen that no one can really predict.
You can't control everything.
No, you cannot. Absolutely. So what we did is we created these protections that say, okay, it's not going to be outright and free of trust. Instead, if the children are going through those circumstances, we can make sure that the money doesn't go into their name until that judgment has been cleared. It's been finalized. Meanwhile, we have a trustee that will use the funds for their health, maintenance, education, and support until they're free and clear of that particular issue. That's just one example of the types of protections we provide. Another example is, what if your children are minors? You don't want to create a trust that says the minor children get outright and free of trust. What if your child isn't around anymore and your grandchildren are the ones to take? Do you want an 18-year-old to take all that money right away? Haven't you heard of the phrase trust fund baby? Where does that come from? That spoiled child that goes to Hawaii, buys a Ferrari, and the money's gone?
That's great.
For an 18-year-old. But when that 18-year-old is 30 and ready to start a business and doesn't have any more money to do that, there's a major problem.
And that's when he might sue his oldest brother who was the trustee of that trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what we do is we say, okay, what kind of limitations can we put? Like I said earlier, do we want to put an age requirement that says, 25 or 30 or even 35? They don't get their money until they reach that age. Do we want to put a provision, again, a motivational factor that says, okay, if the child graduates with a bachelor's degree, once they're done, after the graduation, after they can show that certification to the trustee, they get their money. You can push them as far as you want to push them. So you know how children don't listen while you're alive? But we'll make sure that they listen, even if you're gone, okay?
And please do talk to your attorney, because there may be limits on what you can force. Like, you can't tell them they can't marry a particular person.
No, no, of course, of course.
We're talking with Jacqueline Isaac, her website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's her website, jacquelineisaac.com. Talking about trust and exactly how they can be customized for the specific situation. And I would think it really is the customization that is the most important part.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you think that your family will experience absolutely no problems in the future, perhaps you don't need any customization. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to provide for all of the crazy life circumstances that come into place, which if you're doing an estate plan, that's exactly what you'd be providing for.
Correct.
You need to get a very customized trust, and that's why you should reach out to Jacqueline Isaac. One more time, her website, jacquelineisaac.com, jacquelineisaac.com.
And Ryan and David, there's something else that's very important. A lot of people go to attorneys or they'll go online and they'll create this trust, but they do step one and they forget the most critical aspect, step two. Step two is to take this empty trust. So when we talked about what a living trust is, it's an empty box until you fill it up. Unless you actually take your assets and fund them inside the trust, they're not governed by the jurisdiction of the trust. Instead, they can still go through probate. So if I created a trust agreement and I forgot my house out of that trust, guess what? That house is going through probate court. So for all the listeners out there, if you have a living trust, you need to ask yourself this question. Where are my assets? How are they titled? If they are titled in your name as trustee of the trust, you know you're in okay shape. But if it's in your individual name, you need to think about that 10 times. Because unless it's governed inside that trust, unless that empty trust box is filled to the top, the assets outside of it can go through probate court.
We recently interviewed to sell a house, and they were convinced that the property was in the trust.
Yeah. Happens all the time.
Yeah. Happens all the time. I mean, we see that people will have a trust that is really just an empty shell. And, you know, we begin to step back and kind of look, it's not necessarily something that you want to look outside of what's going on in your family. It's something that you might want to check on your own. I mean, I know for a fact that my girlfriend Melissa actually has everything that should be in her trust, in the trust, identified to be in the trust.
Exactly.
It's not just a shell. So, I mean, it's interesting that so many people will either refinance and pull their property out of the trust, and it might not be put back in the trust. And then when we come along and they think, hey, everything's fine, now it's time to sell the house, we're like, whoa, wait a second, you're not protected here. You have a trust, but yet it's in your parents' name. And we're writing the listing agreement in the parents' name, and they're wondering why. Well, because it's not in the trust.
Yeah, we just
this is one of the questions that the attorneys really wish clients would ask more often. So you might want to jot this down. What do I, the client, need to do to make sure the estate plan will work when the time comes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, clients often think when the documents are done, so are they. But funding is what Jacqueline had touched on. And funding is a fancy word for saying you have to change the title. Well, there's more to it than that. There are accounts. Your IRA, for instance, can have the trust as a beneficiary, but cannot have the trust as the owner. It's an individual retirement account. So you really have to visit with your attorney, and please tell your attorney everything.
With the IRAs especially, you have to be extremely careful because there can be major tax ramifications if the IRA is designated improperly. You do not want the trust to be designated improperly. You have to make sure that the trust itself is qualified. If the trust is not qualified, there are some major tax ramifications. The whole idea of an IRA is to make sure that you save on the tax end of it. But if you do not have a qualified trust and you're naming that trust for your IRA, you're looking at a disaster.
Right. So Jacqueline's touching on the point that you have to have the correct language in the trust document to receive such an asset. And you may have other interesting assets. Timeshares. Please, please sell your timeshares before you die. Please. you know, there may be other interesting assets that you have, gifts that you've received, things that you want specifically. So when you work with your attorney, it's much more than document preparation. Please don't just go to trust mills or places that'll just prepare your documents and send you away. Ask your attorney for help to be sure that all of this is done properly.
You know, you preferenced sell the timeshare with two pleases in front of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to ask, what is it about the timeshare that...
Timeshares are never worth what anybody thinks they are. I'm sorry. You know, you enjoy it. You go on vacation. You go to these beautiful places. You trade your timeshare time maybe with other people. You're in an exchange. All that's great. But when you're not using it anymore... You know, it is tough as an asset to sell and really make the beneficiaries feel good about the price you got.
You know, it's interesting. You sell the asset, and I think what you're saying is that they feel it's worth X.
Or what they paid for it.
Or it's worth so much less. In fact, you get them a great price for it, and they still walk away thinking, geez, we gave it away. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Welcome to our world.
Things,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, expectation management is the business all of us are in. And it's very challenging, and communication is very tough. Then you add the emotions on top of it. Oh, that was our favorite place. We love to go there, and so on. But when you're transacting at the end, and you're a family member doing these transactions, it's very challenging. And it's not a slam dunk, and it's not like you can just hire a realtor to handle the transaction for you. You know, timeshares are not so easy, and there are other assets that are like that. So it's great if you enjoy it. You know, for instance, some of our clients are day traders. They're independent investors. They sit before their computer every day and they're completely involved in this. But if you get really sick or you suddenly pass away, those assets can change in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And now somebody else has to pick up the trail and figure out what you're doing. And let me give you one more. Everybody's doing automatic payments. They've got things by email. If you do not share your email and password with your successor trustee, they can't just forward the mail and receive your statements and receive your bills. Mm-hmm. It could be a real mystery as to which institutions you do business with. So at least once a year, print out all your statements, put them in a file so that somebody else can find them and work with them when the time comes.
And we make sure in our trust packages that we create not just one schedule that lists all the assets in the trust, but also all your assets. Where are they? Who is the institution that's holding the asset? What is their address? What is their phone number? So by the time, you know, that comes, they take a look at the schedules and say, okay, these are the trust assets. This is how we access them. And by the way, here are the non-trust assets, like those IRAs that are out of the trust. And here's how you contact your agent.
So I have a question for you regarding, let's just say you've got a gleamingly well-written trust and the trustee passes away. What? How do people know that they should reach out and contact you? I mean, it's not listed anywhere on any of the assets, is it?
It's listed in our trust. So what we always tell the trustee when we have a client, we say,
this
we
is
recommend,
the important
part. Right. We recommend that you take a copy, because we always provide an original and a copy. We say, we recommend that you take a copy to your next successor trustee. Give it to them. Keep it with them.
So but I don't want my son to know how much money I have.
Then in that situation, you keep it inside your home. We say, take a copy, put it in your china cabinet, and take the original and put it in the safe deposit box. So depending on the situation, we always take that step to advise what you should do with your family.
We're talking with Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. Her website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's the website, jacquelineisaac.com. When we come back, more about questions attorneys wish their clients would ask them. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been speaking with Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. Her website, jacquelineisaac.com. That's her website, jacquelineisaac.com.
You know, we've been talking with Marguerite Lorenz about some of these questions that attorneys have been asking, wish their clients would ask, you know, and certainly there are many of them. But one of the things that I've noticed is that when people tend to get older, they start to lose their capacity to make intelligent decisions in a lot of cases. They may be coming, you know, down with some of these diseases that cause them to, Alzheimer's, for example. And, you know, what should somebody do that senses that their spouse is becoming incapacitated?
Well, I think visiting with the attorney first is really important. Because even a medical professional can say that you don't have capacity, essentially you may still have testamentary capacity. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the lowest level of capacity in the law is marriage. You know, isn't that
anybody
funny?
Can get married?
Anybody can get married.
I was just listening I just heard a story about a confidential marriage that took place. It was just like that, where someone, actually a daughter married her father confidentially. And it all came out at the end. It was really, really disgusting. It was a horrible case, but
you only have to be lucid for the moment that you say I do. But I think the only level lower than that is probably having children. But the idea is that when you want to create a will with your attorney, you really need to understand your assets and the object of your bounty. You know, some idea of who your children are, what your charitable intent is, who you want to have these things after you die. Creating a trust is a higher level of capacity because it's more contractual. So talk to your attorney. If you're concerned that your spouse, and by the way, that's another one of those questions, what should I do if I think my spouse has become incapacitated? Don't we accuse our spouses of incapacity from time to time? But the idea is that you go to the attorney and have a visit. Maybe your last updated document is just a year old. That's fine. Maybe you need to update it now because things have really changed. And to allow your spouse the dignity and honor of their choices is so important. And so each of us has a moment where maybe we shouldn't be driving on the freeway, or maybe things are changing, or the scope of our life is shrinking. I really strongly recommend a relationship with your attorney, not just a document preparer. Your attorney is your advocate and is definitely on your side. Your attorney cannot recommend you for conservatorship. Your attorney cannot call APS. That's Adult Protective Services. So you have to understand that you need to have somebody, someplace that's safe to talk about these things and make sure that your documents are in order and that you have a plan in place. Like, for instance, what's your plan for when you're not driving anymore?
Oh. Well, you know, it is true when you say that people need to trust their attorneys or actually tell the truth, because a lot of times, you know, people sit down and they feel like you're not on their team. Mm-hmm. like, you know, you can't disclose certain things, and you're always scratching your heads like, okay, what is this? What's the motivation here? And you want to help them. You want to actually give them the right advice. And if they're not holding back this information, like you're not on their team, then you can't actually advise them correctly. So it is interesting.
Exactly.
You got to trust the attorney that you're working with. And that's why, you know, we recommend that people work with people that they can actually trust, interview.
And it's why you should really meet a fiduciary before you put their name in the document. You know, I have a great reputation. I'm very blessed. But I've already received a few phone calls in my career where someone has passed away, and then I'm informed that I was named in their documents. So understand how inefficient. I'll do it. I'm happy to do the work. Thank you for naming me. I will do it for you. But wouldn't it be nice to get acquainted before you ever needed me? Maybe I have resources because I've had so much practice helping people with care in their homes or moving to assisted living or all these other things I've had practice with. I sure would like to meet the dog before I have to catch it and put it in my car. It's nicer for the dog too. So I'm just suggesting that if you're working with an attorney and you're getting your documents done and you've selected someone that you trust to serve you when you can no longer do it, at least give that person an opportunity to ask their questions, know where you keep your important documents, and to be able to begin appropriately.
We're talking with Marguerite Lorenz, Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's the website, mytrustee.net. And so you've got a list here of four, and I would imagine there are many, many others, of questions that attorneys wish their clients would ask. And so really what this is, the things that the attorneys really want to make sure the clients know. I guess that's the idea behind it, right?
Right, right. You know, the attorneys are the first line when someone's ready to do their documents. And again, this is why I strongly recommend not to do the do-it-yourself stuff mm-hmm. online. One, you don't know where those documents were drafted or even if they apply to California law. Two, you can't possibly be objective about your own circumstances, and there isn't anyone there to prompt you, ask the questions. And keep in mind, the legislature changes the law, your circumstances change all the time, and guess what? Case law affects everything that we do in this business. So case law can be updated as little as 30 mm-hmm. days ago. There could be a change. A judge and jury make a decision, and now your documents need to be updated.
And that's why we always also send newsletters to our clients and say, oh, by the way, this law came out. Do you need to come in for a review? It's very important. You don't have that when you go to, you know, Miller-type places to do your documents.
Right. So again, we're focused today on the relationship that you have with your professionals. If there's a particular realtor that you'd like to work with, you should tell your fiduciary that. If there's some other particular vendor, maybe you've had the same handyman for years and years and you want to be sure that he's hired to do anything. All of those relationships are precious to us. And as we age, we want to be sure that there are people around us that we trust. And here's a wild idea. Let your CPA, attorney, and fiduciary talk to each other.
You know, when you talk about this spouse and someone becoming incapacitated, it would seem to me, and you mentioned it earlier, that people kind of touch and go, right? One minute they've got it,
good
next minute
they've
sure. lost it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your spouse is looking at the situation going, okay, you know, he's really good today. You know, woke up, he was kidding around, and, you know, he ate breakfast, he knows what time it is, and his clock is right. Whereas, you know, sometimes it's all off and you realize that, you know, maybe they're not there. They're, you know, they've mm-hmm. left for a brief period. So there's this touch and go, and, you know, you may approach them. How is it that what would you guys say to a situation like that? How does somebody come to you and say, you know what, I feel like my spouse is becoming incapacitated, but we don't want to offend them? What do you guys say?
Well, as attorneys, I mean, we have a big standard. We have a responsibility to determine whether or not they have that type of capacity. And sometimes what we do is we give them little tests, little quizzes to say, okay, can they answer this? How do they answer it? We ask them questions, see how their memory is in terms of the object of their bounty, who they're giving those assets to, because that's really what matters in our case.
Sure, if they don't even know yeah. the name,
no,
maybe
big
it's
problem.
Not... Right.
And my angle also is the relationship again. So I've asked some of the attorneys involved to visit at home or to visit at the hospital, to go to where the client is, because often when we're in our more familiar surroundings, we're better. We're more focused. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that you'll notice in your own life routine that you don't think about anymore. Well, if you have to think about driving, like some people really can't talk and drive at the same time. We've seen them all. So, you know, that idea is very important that there's a familiar surrounding. So maybe you need to ask the attorney, the fiduciary, even the CPA to come to you.
You know, why is it, how is it that people choose the trustee? Do they choose the oldest child?
Generally,
is that automatic?
Generally, and for a lot of attorneys, they're under pressure because the client will come in and say, it has to be this person. So I recommend that we all have an open mind about this. I know that for a lot of families, it's expected, like we're royalty. But the fact is that even the perfect eldest son is not the right one to do this job, and certainly not his wife to advise him.
I've had a lot of cases where it ends up being the opposite, where they pick the youngest child because the youngest child has proved to be the most mature, most developed, financially stable. So it always depends, you know, it always depends. But you're right, Marguerite. You always have to give that place, allow, be open-minded.
We're talking with Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services, her website, mytrustee.net. One more time, mytrustee.net. Also, we've had with us Jacqueline Isaac. Her website, jacquelineisaac.com. One more time, jacquelineisaac.com. Thank you both for joining us. Great information for everybody out there. Hope to see you next time, and stay tuned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.